Wednesday, January the 18th, 2012, and the radio program is on the air. It's the nation's most listened to sports talk presentation. It's Primetime Sports on the Fan Radio Network, on Sirius 157, and around the world and up your street on Sportsnet in high definition. Bob McCown, Stephen Brunt in our Toronto studios. A little bit later on, you may recall or you may not recall that the Ugandan Little League team was actually invited to, made it to the Little League World Series, but could not go. And some people with the Canadian Little League team felt bad about that, or badly about that. And so, and they were from Langley, BC, so they raised a bunch of money, and they themselves went over to Uganda to play a friendly, if you will, against the Ugandan Little League team. They were there for several days. I don't even know if it was a full week, but they were there for several days. And among those who accompanied them on the trip was our own Greg Zahn. And he will join us in studio, and we'll talk about the experience and what it was like, et cetera, et cetera. So Zahnie in just a little bit. Meanwhile, we all are aware that Sidney Crosby is out again with a concussion, although he started to skate again, but still apparently has he's feeling the effects.
Yep.
He is not
He's
healthy.
Not symptom-free.
Correct. I'm also told that he is, I don't know whether exclusively or as part of his treatment, he is using a chiropractor.
A chiropractic neurologist. Or a practitioner of chiropractic neurology.
I'm very confused by that.
Well?
I probably have been concussed, but nonetheless, I'm still confused by that. Our next guest has suggested that perhaps this chiropractor isn't the right answer. But I want to put it in, I don't want to paraphrase, I want to let him explain for himself. Dr. Stephen Novella is the Director of General Neurology at Yale University and joins us on the program. Doctor, how are you?
Hi, how are you doing? Thanks for having me.
Okay, so what's your issue with the chiropractor that is treating Sidney Crosby?
Well, I mean, the notion of chiropractic neurology really is not scientifically or medically legitimate. They have no body of knowledge or technique that is unique to them or that they have developed. They're essentially just making stuff up as they go along and calling it chiropractic neurology. Wow. So it's just not science-based or legitimate treatment that they're doing.
Now, there's going to be a bunch of people out here listening, Dr. Novella, who probably use chiropractors for one reason or another, and they feel better after they go to chiropractors. I wonder if you could just back up a little bit to the kind of the, I don't want to do the whole origin story of chiropractic, but, you know, where that came from and how it turned into, well, or how some, it was claimed to be a benefit in terms of neurological treatment.
Yeah, so, you know, unfortunately, it is very confusing. There's a lot of history there. A lot of practices are done under this banner of chiropractic. Chiropractic is what's licensed, and therefore a lot of people call themselves chiropractors, but have very different philosophies. So at the scientific end of the spectrum, there is actually a small number of chiropractors who restrict themselves to evidence-based treatment that do mainly manipulative therapy or, you know, physical therapy, joint mobilization, you know, and there is benefit to that in terms of relaxing muscles and mobilizing joints, but they're really just sports medicine or physical therapists calling themselves chiropractors and maybe do some spinal manipulation. At the other end of the spectrum are those who are closer to the roots of chiropractic from 100 years ago. They're so-called straight chiropractors, and they believe that there's this magical life energy that flows through the body and that by manipulating the spine, they free up the flow of this energy and that can pretty much heal any disease, even non-musculoskeletal disorders. And they treat medical problems with manipulation. So that's pure pseudoscience. It's pure fantasy. That whole spectrum, however, is under the umbrella of chiropractic, so it leads to a lot of confusion.
So what would a chiropractic neurologist, you know, would they do the kind of manipulations that chiropractors do as a way of treating a concussion, for instance, is what we're talking about here?
Well, it's not really clear. I mean, they have some fanciful ideas about neurology, about neuroscience, and they use a lot of physical interventions in order to treat neurological symptoms, but they just don't have any body of research to back them up. Carrick, who's the chiropractor who is treating Crosby, you know, has published some papers with some really absurd notions, in my opinion, and, you know, terrible research that just does not conform to what we know about neuroanatomy, about, you know, just how the body works. So, of course, we get concerned about that because it's spreading misinformation and, in my opinion, pseudoscience, you know, within our field. And then, you know, they also mix a lot of things together often, so they might be doing some treatment that is, you know, that does amount to rehabilitation or physical therapy and that may have some symptomatic improvement, but it has nothing to do, again, with sort of the fanciful chiropractic neurology justification that they put to it.
Without getting, you know, super technical, what kind of absurd notions?
Well, Carrick wrote a paper looking at the blind spot in the different eyes, and he was claiming that by measuring the blind spot, you could assess brain function, and then you could do manipulation to improve the blind spot. So both of those claims are absurd. You cannot say anything about brain function by looking at the blind spot, which is just a function of the anatomy of the eye itself. And you can't, you know, alter the blind spot by doing manipulation or any kind of the chiropractic interventions that he was doing. And he just did terrible study, you know, to show that it's not reproducible. It was very bad protocol or methods that he used. But that's the kind of evidence that he's using to support these sweeping, broad, and unscientific notions about chiropractic neurology.
With Dr. Stephen Novella of Yale University, the director of general neurology there, and he says that the chiropractor who's treating Sidney Crosby is, in my words, not his, a fraud. Chiropractic neurology in and of itself, you believe, is a fraudulent concept. Do you believe, however, in chiropractic in a more generic, general sense?
Well, again, as I said, it depends on what you mean because there's so much that happens under that label. I think that it's perfectly legitimate to do musculoskeletal manipulation. I mean, there's evidence to show that it relaxes muscles. It's helpful to recovery for acute, uncomplicated lower back strain. So in other words, if you have tense muscles in your lower back and you don't have a pinched nerve or something else like that, then doing some kind of manipulation will help relax the muscles and may help get you back to work quicker. But that's about it. I mean, everything else is really just that they do that's legitimate is physical therapy or sports medicine type stuff. There's nothing that is chiropractic that is in it is that is something unique to itself and is legitimate. Any of the notions of the chiropractic subluxation, they believe these are subtle misalignments in the spine. They don't exist. They haven't been able to show that they even exist, let alone that you can move them by adjusting the spine, let alone that then has any medical benefit. They've had 100 years to do this,
right,
and they have not been able to get to establish even the basic principles that the entire field is based on. But again, there are those at the scientific end of the spectrum who have simply molded their practice into a physical therapy type of practice and incorporating some spinal manipulation in the very limited indications for which there is some evidence and for which it's legitimate. But unfortunately, that's the minority of chiropractors. So a lot of them will do that, but then also mix in some other things that are not very scientific, like iridology or homeopathy or herbalism. And then there are those who are really, again, the straight chiropractors who believe in the life energy that T.D. Palmer made up 100 years ago. And that's just superstition.
So your expertise is in neurology. So I can't imagine there ever having been a time when you would ever recommend to one of your patients that they go and see a chiropractor. If they're there to see you, you would say that there's a disassociation there. There would be no benefit. Well, I mean, just as a, and I don't mean any offense or to, well, I guess I'm prying, but like, are you negative in general on chiropractic? Would you yourself go if you sustain, or have you ever gone to a chiropractor, or if you sustained an injury? Is it possible that a chiropractor could help you?
Well, again, I've never personally gone. The evidence shows that if you have muscle strain, that manipulative therapy, you know, which some chiropractors do, is helpful. But it's no more helpful than a physical therapist. It's no more helpful than, you know, medication management. And some studies even show that if you just give patients a pamphlet that says, this is how you take care of your back, that's just as effective too. I think that's part of that is that nothing we do is terribly effective, and mainly what the patient does in terms of taking care of their own back is probably the most important thing. So but the evidence also shows that, you know, it's no more effective, but it's a lot more expensive to get multiple treatments from a chiropractor for a back strain. You're better off just using moist heat and gentle massage and some minimalist intervention or massage or whatever, and not going through an elaborate, expensive treatment, regime. The evidence doesn't support it. The basic concepts don't support it. And, you know, who knows what other stuff they're going to try to throw in there. So, yeah, I'm very cautious about it. And, if I do refer somebody because I want them to get physical therapy, I tend to refer to physical therapists that I know personally. I know what kind of practice they do, and I can stand by, that the fact that they use evidence-based medicine.
Now,
I don't want to put words in your mouth here, Dr. Novella, but what I take from what you're saying is that when it tips into the, just as the broader world of chiropractic, but certainly that when it tips into the world of neurology, that we've entered the realm of quackery. Is that fair?
I think that's fair. Yeah, I mean, I think anything that I've seen that is being labeled as chiropractic neurology, in my opinion, is pure quackery. Yes.
What would they? Concussions. My understanding concussion treatment often seems to wait for the concussion symptoms to resolve themselves to a degree. I'm not so. But is there anything? Would you have any idea what kind of treatment is being applied to Sidney Crosby to allegedly help clear up his concussion?
Yeah, I mean, it's mainly sort of rehabilitation, physical therapy type stuff. And that can help to the degree that it can. Like, for example, if with a concussion you can have vertigo, dizziness. You feel off balance. You may feel the sense of movement. And doing physical therapy is actually the most effective treatment for that. You essentially can train the brain to get used to it and to diminish those symptoms, or to readapt to the new state of things. So it's possible that he's getting some of that, but that's the kind of thing that any physical therapist should be able to do. And I think a lot, reading through, again, I've never personally examined or spoken to Sidney Crosby. I don't have any direct medical details. I only know what's been made public. But reading through a lot of articles discussing his treatment and his symptoms and whatnot, it sounds like he has a concussion. It's getting better slowly, the way we would expect it to. There doesn't seem to be anything unusual about his course. And the descriptions in a lot of the media is trying to make it sound, I think, more positive than it is, in that it sounds like he's just getting a little bit of a placebo effect off the treatment, and then otherwise his course is pretty much what we would expect and not really being altered. There's something we call the cheerleader effect. If you do anything to somebody who has those kind of symptoms and you say, this is going to make you feel better, now get up there and try, to be functional or whatever, people will feel better, they will do better just because they're trying and just because they're expecting to do a little bit better. It's all just a placebo effect. So unless you control for that in some way, you really can't say if the specific treatment or intervention that you're doing is having any specific benefit. So I object to those claims that there's something special or specific that they're doing that's helping the brain heal itself. There's absolutely no support for those notions. The brain will heal on its own time, and you just need supportive care, good nutrition, and then at the kind of activity that will maintain normal function but not overwhelm the system or overwhelm the brain. And that's it. And then there's really nothing magical or special that you can do to make the brain heal itself faster. And people who claim that are frankly just making it up.
With Dr. Stephen Novella of Yale University. So, look, if I came in, doctor, and said, if I rub, Sydney, if I massage your toes, your brain's going to heal faster. I'm not, and I did that. Well, okay, so we all know it's not going to help, but it's not going to hurt. Is there any danger in these chiropractic neurologists, if you will, or neurological chiropractors?
What's the harm question that we always get? And sometimes the therapies do involve direct harm, although a lot of the so-called alternative treatments are directly benign. They don't do anything that's directly harmful. You know, there are concerns in the literature about neck manipulations causing strokes. It's a rare but serious complication. So that sometimes, you know, I wouldn't assume it's risk-free. But assuming that there's nothing that's causing direct physical risk that's being done, then the question is, you know, how much time, energy, effort, and resources are being diverted away from more benign or more effective treatments? And also, you know, I get concerned about using a placebo effect in order to convince somebody that there is something specific about the intervention that you're doing, to basically convince them that your underlying philosophy is true. And not only this individual case, but because he's famous, trying to convince the world. You know, yeah, chiropractic, you know, neurology is legitimate because Sidney Crosby feels better. Then that teaches the public pseudoscience as if it were science, and that how it's hard to calculate the downstream harm that kind of thing causes.
Sure.
And that's why, you know, like I and others have written about it to sort of set the record straight. Like, nope, this doesn't mean that there's anything legitimate to their claims. This is easily interpretable as just placebo effects, and you know, they really have not justified the claims that they're making.
Well, and magical thing, I know you're a debunker. I know that's part of what you do, Dr. Novella. So that whole idea of magical thinking is would be anathema to you, I would think, right?
Yeah, we see lots of harm from magical thinking, delayed treatment for when you do get a serious or non, you know, self-limiting illness, and then you believe in the magical treatment because of placebo effects from previous, you know, treatments. Then, you know, then we see people with tremendous harm. And you can go to whatstheharm.net. It's a website which is filled with stories about people who came to tremendous medical harm because they pursued wishful thinking before science-based medicine.
It's interesting stuff, Doctor. Thank you for your time tonight. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Stephen Novella, Yale University Director of General Neurology. He claims that Sidney Crosby's chiropractor.
Well, who, anybody, not just his, but anybody who is claiming to practice that brand of...
Any chiropractor who says they can help with a neurological problem, in this case a concussion, is a fraud.
That's what he's saying. Quack, fraud, take your pick.
It's a few words. When we come back, I gather, fascinating, glorious trip to Africa for a baseball game between Canada and an African group of, well, I guess, 12-year-olds. Greg Zahn will join us to talk about it when Primetime continues on the Fan Radio Network, Sirius, and Sportsnet. Twenty-five past the hour. Primetime continues on the Fan Radio Network, Sirius and Sportsnet. Bob McCown, Stephen Brunt in our Toronto studios. We've talked a fair bit over the last little while about the situation with the Ugandan Little League team. And you might say, well, I didn't know that Uganda had a Little League team. And quite frankly, before this past Little League World Series, neither did I. But the story was that the Ugandan team was going to come to America to play in the Little League World Series, and I think they were scheduled to play Canada, if I'm not mistaken. And they couldn't get visas in order to accomplish this objective. And this became an issue during the tournament for a number of people, saying, you know, that's a shame that these kids wouldn't have this great experience. And this year, Canada was represented by a group of kids from Langley, B.C. And they took it upon themselves to say, hey, maybe, or somebody did say, hey, maybe we should go. We should go there. Let's us go there and play against their kids. And they raised the money. It kind of snowballed, mushroomed, if you will. And our own, and they're still there, getting ready for more games. And our own Greg Zahn wandered over there and has just wandered back. A little jet lagged still.
I have. I just got off the plane, in fact, a couple hours ago.
Well, thanks for coming over.
Mind-blowing trip.
What was your motivation for going over there? Somebody asked you, somebody from Sportsnet, say, hey, you want to go? Did you read about it?
No, actually, you know, I've been an athlete ambassador for Right to Play for several years, going back to my playing days with the Blue Jays. They brought it to my attention about the injustice, if you will. And it wasn't just this year. It was the year before as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Didn't know that.
Yeah, there was another situation where there were some crazy rules about run score differential and all these weird deciding games and it didn't make any sense to me. But the Ugandan kids had basically earned the right to come to Williamsport a couple of times and been denied on technicalities. And it was just really unfortunate because this is a place where you would never expect to see baseball being played. But I can tell you, having been there and seen these kids, they're extremely talented.
Really? Huh?
They love to play the game of baseball. There's some movement going on over there. There's some schools developing, which is amazing. They're playing baseball in East Africa. And these kids, I'm here to tell you, can play. The arm strength was incredible. In fact, I know that the Canadian kids have been, you know, in full hockey mode for the last 4 months or so. But the arm differential between the Ugandan kids and the ones from Langley, B.C., other than the Pan brothers, was night and day. I mean, we're talking about a burgeoning Dominican Republic here.
Wow. Really?
If somebody wants to put some time and effort, this is an untapped region of the world that could be producing top-notch baseball players.
Really? It's not interesting.
The shortstop, Ivan, you might see, you know, some footage here in the next few days. This kid is silky smooth at shortstop. Their middle infielders were unbelievable. They darn near turned a double play in a Little League game, and I don't think I've ever seen one turned in a Little League game. I didn't feel like I was watching 11- and 12-year-old kids. I felt like I was watching kids that, you know, that were, you know, 13, 14 years old and had been playing baseball their whole lives.
How did they end up – do you have any sense of how they – because there's no cultural connection to baseball. It was an English colony, right, Uganda. Where did baseball come from, and how did it wind up? Is there somebody there who's kind of the father of baseball in Uganda?
Well, you know, there must be. I know that George, their coach, he loves baseball, and at the Sharing Youth Center there, where they're pretty much based out of this particular group of kids, you know, they're building a baseball field, and, you know, they teach baseball. And you know, the one thing about it is they're using sports to – teach these kids about life, and they're using fair play and honor and you know, honesty, and they're teaching kids the most amazing life lessons. And I can tell you, these Ugandan kids, they have nothing. They have nothing. They're living, you know, by candlelight in shacks with no running water. But you know what? They just never stop smiling. They're the most gracious and welcoming people that I've ever met in my whole life, and they have absolutely nothing. And you look around the city, and, you know, we were staying in this nice hotel, and it blew my mind that these two situations, a luxurious hotel and this impoverished place, could be existing side by side. There's no in between there. But they don't seem to care. They're happy. They love to play the game. They're very engaging. They ask amazing questions about the game. I gave a round of practice one day, gave a clinic the next, and it was just the most rewarding thing I've ever seen because they just took to it so quickly.
The interesting thing is here, I'm thinking about this. I mean, these kids might have never seen a television. Have they ever seen a game?
They've seen
a big league game.
Yeah, they've seen some tape. Yeah, in fact, at the school in Piggy, where the actual game took place.
Right.
There's three fields there right now. There's a full-size field for the older kids, and they're building six more. It's like a mini
baseball camp.
Spring baseball school.
Yeah.
Like the Dominican Republic. That's basically what they're trying to do. And every night they watch playoff baseball, not only for the kids to see the game itself, but to teach the coaches how to coach.
I see.
They are really serious about this.
So they're watching tapes. They acquire tapes.
Yeah, it's just DVDs of the of this year's World Series.
Oh, I see.
And the founder, his name's Richard. They basically they're educating people not only how to play the game but how to coach it as well.
Sure. Did they understand that you were a former major league player?
Yeah,
they sure do. Did they react the way a North American kid would to meeting, you know, a major league player?
At first, they were kind of silenced. They didn't really get it.
I see.
And then I started handing out baseball cards.
Oh.
And they got it right away. Then they understood. You know, I have, none of them have probably consciously ever seen me play. but they get what I was, and they understand what it was that I did.
Right.
And they followed me around. When they weren't engaged in an activity, they followed me around. I would
like
look
the
over
Pied Piper. Huh?
I would look over my shoulder, and then somebody would say, "Oh, you know, I got a question for you," or a coach from another team, another region. There's four major teams there. They would come up to me and say, "Can I get your email address? And can we exchange ideas? Can you send me some instructional video?" These people are hungry to learn the game. They love the game. They love playing it. And I'm telling you, the talent is off the charts. They're athletic as can be.
Wow, that's a different, you know, Greg, that's a really different story than when we talked about this originally, when you heard the story about the kids not being able to come from Uganda to Williamsport. You know, I kind of assumed that this was a little one-off, a funny little anomaly down there that somebody had decided to put a baseball team together. But the notion that there's actually kind of a burgeoning baseball culture there, you know, that they're an academy almost, and that they're playing that I would never have anticipated.
Oh, and you know what? And the chances are, unless they want to stay up and into the middle of the night, they're never going to get to see a game live because of the time difference.
Well, yeah,
but
but even access to televisions. Right?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these kids don't have running water or electricity. In fact, 95% of the country, if I'm not mistaken, is off the grid.
Who's paying for the infrastructure down there, Greg? Who's putting the money into it?
Individuals, private individuals. And you know what? It's just one of those things where, the one gentleman, Richard, he's stepped up and he's put this together. It's a school. And there's girls there too. They're teaching the girls how to play softball as well. And they're very talented. In fact, probably the best young catcher that I saw was a girl. She had the best hands of any of the guys that I was teaching, and it was amazing to me to just see how much they play and how a lot of them don't even have shoes on. They're pitching on the rubber in a dirt hole with no shoes on, and they're running the bases, playing the game right there next to somebody who has a pair of plastic spikes on, and they share equipment. You know,
I was going to ask you about gloves and stuff. Is there enough to go around?
No.
No. Well, not everybody has their own glove, right?
No, nobody really has their own glove.
Okay, so there's a bunch of gloves that go into a bag probably at the end of practice or a game, and you use them as you need them.
Right, and that's the most amazing thing is they have humongous respect for the fact that this is our stuff, and it stays in the bag, and it doesn't disappear. And, I mean, the balls are ragtag, but when one of them gets fouled off or it disappears into the bushes, they hunt for it and they keep it and they play with it and they play
until you can't play with it anymore.
Right, they play with a lot of passion.
Until the stitching comes out probably.
Absolutely. But it was incredible to watch the level of polish that these Ugandan kids had and just the story in itself, the fact that they're the first African nation to qualify for the Little League World Series in Williamsport, and they somehow lose their opportunity on a technicality. That in itself is a story. The subplot there is the fact that you are seeing a burgeoning baseball culture in Uganda, and then on top of that, the relationships that were developed between the Canadian kids and the Ugandan kids, the lessons that these kids must have learned while they were there. I know that I was brought to almost tears walking through the slums with little Felix. You'll see little Felix in some of the clips. He ended up being the hero, a little 11-year-old kid. I mean, like this tall, he strokes a clean base hit to center field in the bottom of the sixth after Canada had tied it in the top of the sixth, ends up scoring on a ground ball to shortstop in the bottom half, and he ends up being the winner. But he lives in a little shack. His grandmother, they have nothing. I can't imagine if they know where their next meal's coming from, and yet she's handing out beaded bracelets that she had made for the people. Felix never stopped smiling. He was one of the most engaging young men I've ever met. They speak English. The kids all speak English. English is the main language there. But their spirit and just the fact that they have nothing, and yet they are so generous with their time, with whatever that is that they have, but the smiles alone were the biggest gift I ever got.
Did you get any sense of how the kids, in the time you were there, the kids from Langley, and just kind of how they were reacting to all this?
I didn't get to see them when they first got there, but if the way they were mixing and mingling with the African kids was any indication. It was very common when there was downtime, you would see the African kids, and one right next to the other, they'd all be mixed and mingling. In fact, it was almost like they had made special friends, and you'd see the same three or four kids together, and two of them would be Canadian, and two of them would be Ugandan, and they'd be playing little video games on their phones or whatever, and just taking part in sport, in exchange. And then you see at the end of the game, the Ugandan kids actually were pulling their jerseys off. These are jerseys that Easton had given and made for this team, and they were pulling their jerseys off and handing them to the Canadian kids as a sign of thanks.
Wow.
For having brought this game to them. And it was amazing because it was a real proud moment for me to see the kids that played in this game get to walk away with their own baseball bag and their own bat and their own glove. That was a really big moment for me to see them get that kind of stuff, because the dreamers are, the ones that we have to cradle. We have to coddle these kids. We have to reward the dreamers. They earned their way to Williamsport, and we rewarded them somehow. And the people that contributed to this, Trent Edwards, his family, they're building a baseball field at the Sharing Youth Center. These are people that need to be commended because they've touched the lives of a lot of young, deserving kids, both here and in Africa.
Remarkable. Do you think this is as a result of what you saw? What happens next year? What happens in the years to come? Does the Ugandan team, and I know you can't answer this question, does the Ugandan team get to come to the Little League World Series and get that trip and that reward? Or do we start something entirely different? And that is maybe teams from North America, or not just Canada, going there, if that's what it takes.
Well, I think that there's a possibility of both. I think in the short term, yes, I think the Ugandan kids are now going to be a lot more prepared for having birth certificates. A lot of these kids may not even know where their parents are. They're living with a grandparent.
Sure.
They don't have birth certificates. There's one place in Kampala for them to go to get a birth certificate that makes it legitimate.
Mm.
One office. There's a lot of people there. But George, the head coach, Richard, a number of other people that are, in these four little pockets that they all have their own team, they're all very well prepared now and a lot more well-versed in the bureaucracy of getting these kids to the United States. Now, they've taken the Ugandan kids to Poland to play. They've played against Kuwait and a lot of these other clubs that are predominantly American kids who are
service kids, right?
Yeah, service kids or oil worker kids from, Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia dominates this section of the world every single year. They're predominantly American kids.
Right.
But they have the know-how now. And, with boots on the ground, right to play has been a huge help. George, the Little League coach there and the leader there at Sharing Youth Center, they're going to be ready. They're going to be ready the next time.
With Greg Zahn, what a wonderful story.
Great.
Stick around for a little bit. We're going to talk about maybe a little bit more of that, but also some baseball from this side of the pond while we have Zahnie here before he has his two-day nap. It's Primetime on the Fan Radio Network, Sirius and Sportsnet. Thirteen minutes before the hour. Bob McCown with Stephen Brunt and Greg Zahn in studio. So we got into a conversation during the commercial break, which we'll continue to discuss it because Alex Anthopoulos was in the studio not so long ago. We got talking about we kind of browbeat him about the kid from Japan and the bidding process and the changes that he'd made and there no big name free agent, no addressing the left field situation. And all the things that had happened. And we were talking here, and the focus of our conversation, quite frankly, was Fielder. But in a more generic sense, the fact that this organization, there are a significant number of people that would view this as a disappointing offseason for the Toronto Blue Jays, at the very least. some would say, pathetic, abysmal, blunderous.
Colossally disappointing.
Yeah, barring a rabbit being yanked out of a hat in the
right.
next three,
unless,
four,
unless
or five weeks.
Unless something crazy happens.
Now, so, I mean, obviously I respect your views on baseball. You're not going to be 100% right, but you know, I mean, you played the game, you've observed the game, you've watched this team virtually every day last year. Is this team at a point? Is this team good enough that the addition of one or two free agents can be, you know, no guarantees, can be impactful?
No, they're not there yet.
Having said that, would you be in the bidding for Prince Fielder?
I would definitely be in the bidding for Prince Fielder.
But so you don't think those are two mutually?
But no,
they're not conflicted.
No, I don't think so. And the reason why I say that is because you're not talking about signing Prince Fielder for six months or, you know, a half season. You're not buying him at the deadline. You're talking about a guy that's going to get somewhere between six and ten years on a contract. So what if you're not ready right now? Now, that's my opinion. I look at the ball club and I think there are some major holes. In fact, I thought they went backwards as an organization last year.
So did I.
So I look at this and I think, when are you going to have an opportunity to get a kid like Prince Fielder in his late 20s, who's been as productive as he's been, who's been as durable as he's been, and as you said in the break, the Yankees in Boston aren't even in the running.
They're
they don't need him. They can't use him.
Yeah.
So the opportunity is right there in front of you. It's like on a tee saying, you know, knock me out of the ballpark.
And we may never see this again.
Might not ever see it. And you have to pick up those pieces when you can pick them up. There's only one reason why there's no starting pitchers being signed by the Blue Jays right now and why Yu Darvish got all that attention, because there isn't anything out there worth the money this year. So at least the ball clubs are being smart, saying, well, we're not going to spend it just because he's the best free agent on the market this year. We're not going to overpay for him like they did for a Gil Mesh in Kansas City.
Yeah, because he was that year.
Because he was that guy.
He was that year, the guy who was available that
exactly.
year.
Exactly. Yeah. So they overpay for Gil Mesh, and now they're stuck with a $55 million contract. So, but you do pick up a guy like Prince Fielder when it's available. Should they have been in on Papelbon? Should they have been in on Nathan? Absolutely.
And allegedly they were in on Papelbon.
Well, maybe they were. But they weren't in on it enough because he ends up in Philly.
Sure.
So, but the point is that I looked at the free agent market going into November, and I said there are two places where the Blue Jays could get better on the free agent market. One would be closer. The other one would be a power bat. And I think the power bat in Prince Fielder also solves your left field situation. You take Adam Lind, who had physical problems dealing with one of the least physical positions in professional baseball, first base. There's nothing demanding about that position. I'm sorry. I caught for, you know, 22 years. First base
that's
is a
what, that's
first
where they base put is, you when you can't play
first
anywhere
base
else.
Is a day off. And he wasn't physically able to handle it. He had a sore back all season long. Adam Lind is a hitter in my mind.
He's a DH.
I think he's fine in left field.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because you know what? I watched Manny Ramirez play left field for a long time in Boston, and he drove in more than he let in. And Adam Lind's the same way. And you know what? Adam Lind's good enough in left field that he's going to address the situation of Thames and all the other contenders that you've got out there, should I say pretenders?
Oh, look at Zonny.
We're all on the same
choir. We're all on the same page
when
with this.
When I was saying,
here's the thing. Here's the question I should have asked Anthopoulos last week, and I didn't. And maybe I needed you to poke me a little bit. So you're not ready now. Do you think you'll be ready in 2013 now? Do you think you'll be ready in 2014? Surely to God, they'd have to say, well, we plan to be ready by one of those 2 years. Okay, if it's not 12, then it's either 13 or 14. Otherwise, this whole thing is a disaster. So, having said that, do you expect in 2013 or 2014 to be able to get a guy like Prince Fielder?
I don't think they're going to be able to get him.
And he's only going to cost
you
more.
Get him, but right. Who else is there?
Who else is going to be out there?
And who do you think you're going to be able to get
exactly.
That's going to be as impactful as this guy? And you're going to sign him for 6, 8, 10 years. He'll still be here.
What difference does it make? Yeah, exactly. What difference does it make whether you sign him today or 2 years from now? He's still in the fold for the next 6 to 10 years.
We're all in the same place.
It doesn't
place
make
on
any sense.
One,
and I can tell you right now, short of having seen You know, I'll be in spring training the whole time this year, but from what I've seen come up, they're a lot further away from being there. If they think they're going to go the player development route, they either need, you know, new scouts or new player development people, because the guys that they have coming to the big leagues are not getting it done.
You look beautiful, Zonnie, by
the way.
Thank you. Safe trip down to Florida, and good weather between now and spring training, and maybe we'll see you during spring training, if not in April. Thanks, pal.
See you.
Yeah. Greg Zahn. Thanks to him, and also to Dr. Stephen Novella for joining us on the program. For Brunt, McCowan, have a nice evening. See you tomorrow.